Hey guys, welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. This is an excellent podcast with a dog owner dealing with so many things. So we literally covered so much, with off-leash recall to healing to corrections to how to introduce all these things. It's like really layered with some good information, and I know you guys are going to enjoy it. Netherlands and Europe, I'm going to be there this fall, as well as Nashville, Tennessee. All of my seminar and courses are linked in the show description, and I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. And if you do, don't forget to head over to the iTunes review chart if you're listening to this on iTunes, or subscribe if you're listening to this on Spotify. Thank you guys so much, and I'll talk to you next time.
We did get Indy fixed, and at the end of his recovery week, or his second week of recovery, he full-on attacked Ryder, like really bad.
Okay.
And I was trying to figure out what the trigger was, and I wanted to see, like, your thoughts on that, because what was happening was they each had their chew toys. Indy was across the living room. Ryder was on the other side of the living room, and Ryder was, like, laying below me. And then Indy, like, they were like that for probably about 20 minutes, just eating, like, or not even eating, because there was no treats or anything involved. It was just toys. And then Indy just got up and walked over to Ryder, and Ryder immediately got up, took a step back, and, like, tucked his head down and away. And Indy snarled at him, growled at him, and then lunged for him. And, like, Ryder was limping. He was bleeding, like, a whole bunch, because he had gotten his ear pretty good. He still has a couple puncture wounds on his neck that are still healing. So it's been about like 2 or 3 weeks now since that happened. But I couldn't figure out what the trigger was, and the only thing I could think of, because he didn't, to me, Ryder showed submission, and Indy just like went after him. And then the only thing I could maybe think of was that Indy didn't want Ryder by me.
It was the, were the toys still out?
They were, but they, like, he made no pass. Like, Ryder stepped away from the toy, and he made no effort to get the toy.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's probably a mixture of both. I think that if you're working on any type of potential resource guarding, you know, whatever, and trying to figure out those triggers, it could have been you, and it also could have been the the toy, or in this case, it could have been both. Because so let's zoom back a little bit and say, hey, okay, we have Indy, we have Ryder, they're both hanging out, chewing on their toys, whatever, and then Ryder comes over by you, and then Indy gets up and starts to snarl and growl, and then snaps. So it's probably a combination of you and the toys. So that's very classic resource guarding.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. So that's what I would say is it's I would say it's probably more the toy than it is you, but you probably just tipped it over the edge.
Okay.
Yeah. So I always suggest, especially with dogs who are iffy with each other, like these guys, where you're not 100% like, oh, no, they'd never have issues with each other, they're great.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, then I never really do any of the toys or bones or treats or anything, unless they're completely separated and they have the ability to do those things safely. And that's what I think, because you did so well with everything, right? Like, everything's going great and you haven't had any issues and everybody's coexisting, and then you're adding in these super valuable things into the mix, and that's just, I don't want to say it's a recipe for disaster, because it really depends on the dog's relationship.
Yeah.
So you just,
Okay.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean
What do you
we've
think of
kind of
that?
no, that makes sense. We've pulled everything out. And I mean the only thing that they really have now is the balls. But as far as like the Snoop or like stuffed animal toys or anything like that, like we've kind of like let it be. It was just like it was interesting because Indy before that, he could care less about what Ryder did. Ryder was the one that was resource guarding, and I had started doing like resource guarding training with both of them because I didn't want it to be an issue. And
Right.
it had gotten a lot better where they could take from each other and neither of them were reacting, but Indy was not reacting from the start. And it was just like really interesting that like I don't know what that like what set it off or why he reacted so harshly. Which is what was like confusing to me. But yeah, we've pretty much kept him like the only thing they have really access to has been balls now. 'Cause yeah, we definitely don't want want little tiffs happening.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I totally understand. It's frustrating, obviously. It is one of those things though that to me it's like what's and I get it. It's like we can sit here all day and talk about coulda, woulda, shoulda. Was it you? Was it the toys? Whatever. But to me, if you were to this is the way I'm looking at it, is we have two dogs and they're chewing on toys, and first of all, it's not a. There's nothing involved that's going to be warranted. It's not like, oh well, this is something that is warranted a fight or a reaction or whatever. I don't think that that's. I'm not trying to say that. I'm not trying to say, oh well, yeah, of course this is going to happen. It's not fair that these things happen. All I'm saying is my job is to try to figure out. Okay, this little, it's not even a fight, right? It sounds like Indy just beat up Ryder. And I think it's
Pretty
more,
much.
yeah, I think it's more about, okay, that sucked. Now what do we do? And I think the only thing to really do from here is take a step back and go, okay, can we isolate and try to figure out the triggers here? Is there something that caused this? Is there something that made this happen? And we have two variables. It could have been you, sure. It doesn't sound like you are a trigger for them in the past, really. It's not been a thing. And it also could have been the toys. Either way, it's again, we can say, well, I guess this it, I mean we can start now. I mean it could have been me, it could have been the toys. So
Yeah.
from here, I think your job is to play it really slowly to try to figure out how to manage the situation without these incidences. And if you're looking at this situation, the two variables, in my opinion, the biggest variable was the toys. I
Yeah.
wouldn't give them anything unless they're completely separated in separate rooms to work on. And then I would be very conscious and mindful of when they have that, like, I don't want it's not open space, but when they have that communive space where they have the space together, like in your home, and they're walking around, like I always pick those things up. To me, that's a very the sky is blue type thing. Anytime, even with my own personal dogs, I never leave out high value things. There's little Kong balls rolling around my house, but there's not bones, there's not things that the dogs are going to see valuable.
Yeah.
Unless there's a problem, because then if there's a problem over like a stuffy toy or something, then those go away forever too. And I think
Yeah.
it your job is to just figure out if you're not having consistent fights, it's very likely that it's not an issue with them because you would see it more often. You wouldn't be seeing it
Yeah.
once in a blue moon. So if you go, oh, you know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden you're healthy, you're healthy, you're healthy, and then you wake up one day and you feel like crap. you're not going to go, oh, this is life now. You're going to go, what's wrong? What happened? Am I sick? What's the variable?
Yeah.
What's the, you know what I mean? You're going to try to pit, and then you go to the doctor and you're trying to figure out what is the problem? What is the reason why this is happening? So that's really what we're doing here is we're going, we're fine. Boom, this crappy thing happens. Are there anything in the mix that says like, hey, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, again, you wake up feeling crappy. I'm like, oh, well, you went to bed at 2 a.m. or, oh, you drank 10 beers last night or whatever. It's like, it's really easy to point to the thing of, oh, well, this is why you feel crappy, right? It's the same thing with dogs when they have this type of little spat here, this little fight. There's one big thing, which could be the toys and then potentially you. And it could have been the blend too. So they're both chewing on toys. Ryder comes over to you to get attention, but Indy's already feeling this sort of way. Indy's already feeling this pissed off, like, oh, well, you got your toy and I have mine. And then Ryder comes over to you and just ups the ante with the value. And then there's this thing. I don't know for sure. That's off the top of my head.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of also like wondering if maybe it could be like just like a one-off thing because of like it was the neutering. It was he had just gotten all his shots. Mm-hmm. He had been in the cage like for mostly resting like the whole week. And the only time he was out, he was on a leash. And like, so I was wondering if it was just like kind of the perfect storm, so to speak.
Yeah, easy.
So sure. I don't know if that's necessarily the case or not, but I do want to like give it the possibility of like, hey, like, we want to think about this kind of thing.
Yep. Doing all the right things.
Do you think if I do like, because obviously I wasn't able to do training with him as much with when he was resting.
Right.
But like the more training and structure I give him, that would help with the resource guarding.
Yeah, for sure. yes and no. It's because we don't really know exactly. So would it help with the resource guarding? Sure. If that's what it is, sure. I think, yes. For an example, again, my two dogs, if I work with my, I say puppy, he's almost 9 months, but he's definitely a puppy compared to my older dog. But if I work with my younger dog and do training and downstays and heel work, and I'm just actively working him multiple times a day, he is going to be less likely to come inside and wreak havoc, and less likely, I'm saying. So, you know, it's like us. We have all this pent-up energy, and we go for a run, and boom, that's released, right? So I definitely think the more you work him, the less likely you're going to have this tension, less likely you're going to have conflict. But also, as you're working on these things, in conjunction with that, you're also going to be able to have better obedience overall, which is your ability to, like, again, with my two dogs, I'm able to recall one, I'm able to send the other one to a place, I'm able to really manage the situation with clear communication to make things a lot easier. If I didn't have good communication with my dogs, I would have to physically go and grab each one each time and pull them away or put them in a place or put them in a down, so on and so forth. So yes, absolutely. The more that you do obedience and the more that you have better training and better communication, you're absolutely going to be able to manage the situation better than if you didn't, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll try and keep working on that then and see how it goes.
Yeah, I just think that, like you said, it could have been a one-off. It could have been with the neuter and maybe some discomfort, maybe whatever, a kind of a pot of things mixed up. Grouchy, irritated, frustrated, you name it. Could have been all those things together. Again, especially if it's not consistent. So again, for me, if my dog uses some sort of, if my dog goes after my other dog, I'm, of course, you know, breaking it apart, or if it's over, I'm trying to look at the situation and go, okay, what just happened?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, somebody left a bone out. Oh, because these are, the thing is, and I don't, I'm not saying that you think this. I think sometimes, and even myself, I have to remind myself that when we do air quotes dog training is essentially the ability to teach the dog the behaviors that we want and what we don't want, but we're not going to be able to train a robot, right? So if the dog wants to, again, like if we teach a dog really good recall and the dog comes back every time we call the dog, 100%, great. Millions of people would kill for that. But let's say the dog leaves the yard, runs down three houses, three blocks, three neighborhoods down. That's not training. The training starts when you open your mouth, right? So you can't sit there and go, oh, the dog ran three blocks away, they're not trained. That's not a training concept. That's the owner not paying attention to what the dog did. Because if the dog was running away three blocks away and we said come and they didn't come back, that's a training problem. But it's but it's not a training problem if the dog is a dog and wanders away. My point being, to your situation, is dogs are primal, they're protective, they hold strong values in certain things, and the value holding is going to be predicated off of the dog. Some dogs are obsessed with pillows, some dogs are obsessed with treats and toys, and it all just depends on the dog's demeanor, their temperament, and their relationship with the other dog, whether or not that's going to be a problem. And so this could have just been simply an accumulation, again, with the neuter and two valuable things in the situation, and then an explosion. And your job is to just go, okay, that was a mistake. No more toys that close with each other. And, you know, hopefully it just doesn't happen again.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So it's just, I just want you to, because I think dog owners get really, and I've seen this, where they get really like, oh, the training isn't going good. I'm like, but what you're dealing with isn't training. It's more, management. Management's a loose word, but it's kind of a vague word. But that's what you're really dealing with, is it's not that your training failed. It's that you just set yourself up for failure. And it's not like, you know, your dogs weren't listening to you. It's that you put them in a situation that ultimately made them fire off.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, it's like, you can't train a dog not to want to run after a squirrel.
Correct.
But you could train them to not run after them.
Yeah. You can work on leave it, and you can work on recall. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, you know, and again, it's the general public doesn't understand the concepts of training sometimes, where, oh, the dog's trained, we're done. The dog's never going to make mistakes. They're never going to chew on something again. They're never going to run off again. It's, you're just training for when the moment happens, right? It's like you're training for that moment when it happens. And if the training fails when you say dog come and they're running off, then your training is faulty and you need to tune that up. But you can't, you know, if you put your dog into a situation where, you know, they're set up for failure, and it's more of a management thing. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out, that it's, I mean,
yeah,
even
I appreciate that.
The most trained dogs in the whole world with obedience still make mistakes all the time. You know, it's a matter of making sure that you're there in order to apply your training. And if you're not there to apply your training, then doesn't matter. You know, it's like being an assassin like Chuck Norris, and somebody breaks into your house and you're not home. Well, then doesn't matter how cool you are with your karate and your nunchucks and how you can beat anybody up in the world. If you're not home to protect your house, it has nothing to do with that, right? And that's a lot like dog training. If you can't apply your skill sets because the dog is already three blocks away, it has nothing to do with your training. You're like, oops, dog got out.
Yeah.
So just remember that, I guess, moving forward, because I think dog owners tend to beat themselves up over the training aspect when it's more of a management thing than anything.
Yeah. Okay. No, that makes sense. Good reminder.
Yeah. Cool.
Hi, buddy. So I've been trying to do with him too for leash training. And he doesn't pull as hard with the prong collar, but he also doesn't respond to the corrections of the prong collar.
Okay, for heel work or just for pulling, I mean, okay. So your dog is pulling on the leash, doesn't respond to the prong collar corrections.
Yeah.
Okay. So walk me.
Whereas, like, when I did it, because when I started with Ryder, like, he responds to the corrections so well. So now with him, I'm basically like repeating what I did with Ryder, and it's not working. And even like food lauring, like he could care less about like the food lauring or anything like that. So I don't know how to go about like training that. I've tried just holding him in place. I've tried stopping. Stopping seems to be what's kind of gives like the most effect, and just letting him like self-soothe. So anytime he starts to pull, I've been just stopping and standing there and not looking at him, completely ignoring him, not telling him what to do. And then as soon as like he's sitting, I'm telling him like good boy, and then I'm gonna start walking again. And then so I don't know if that's the right way to go about doing it, but that seems to be the only thing that's kind of worked.
Sure. one thing that I'm probably going to see in this equation is your engagement. So the when you were explaining this to me, I am seeing a dog that's disengaged with you. So
Yeah.
when you're out walking him, so I'm just imagining you have him on the leash, you have his prong collar on, you move forward. He's looking forward. He's not really engaged with you. He's not looking at you. And then you, excuse me, and then you slow down and stop, and he stops inevitably because he can't pull you. I mean, he's not going to pull you down down the road. So that's the first thing you have to start focusing on is engagement. I think that that's really, really important. If your dog isn't looking at you or engaged with you, you don't have a shot in getting your dog to walk with you in a heel, right? So there's two things. There's engagement and then there's the heel behavior that the dog has to know. So the dog has to know when you say heel, it means walk at my heels on a loose leash. That has to be fundamentally really ingrained. Like the dog really has to know what that is in order for you to get a successful heel, obviously. And then second to that is engagement, which means you have to make sure that when you are heeling your dog forward, you're gonna you could have a so some dogs will heel really nicely, but not have engagement with the dog, which I think will just slowly unravel. So what I would do is when you're walking with him, I would be doing this without the other dog because you need full engagement. So I would be telling him which dog are we talking about, Indy or Ryder?
Andy, Ryder's
Okay.
good.
Okay. So we're
So
mo
I when I've been walking him for the leash training, it's been just him. The only time I've walked them together was when I was trying to like introduce them, and only a couple times since. Otherwise, I've been walking them individually.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea. So when you're riding, or when you're riding with Ryder, when you're heeling, I would don't dogs get into tunnel vision, right? So they get into this, we're going forward and that's it, right? And a lot of dog owners do this is they want their dog to walk nicely on a leash, but they're not giving their dogs any reason to. So for me, I typically will slow down and I'll work on engagement exercises. So this typically looks like what I call a drawback recall. So again, like 9 times out of 10, you put your dog on a leash, you start walking, and they're like, we are not done walking until we come back home into this driveway or the front yard or whatever. They don't have any, there's nothing that stops that tunnel vision. There's nothing that interrupts that thought process of when we move forward, we're together. So I like to do these drawback recalls. So essentially, I'll go out, I'll slow down to make sure the dog's with me. Typically, if the dog isn't with you, they'll get a correction for walking past your leg because you have a prong collar. That's obviously the collar that you would use. Two things with that. The prong collar has to be fit properly. So it can't be loose, can't be falling down. It's got to fit right behind the dog's ears. If that doesn't happen, the correction just isn't as meaningful. It's the same thing when we talk about if you're trying to get somebody's attention and you're whispering, hey, versus hey, and you're shouting. So the correction has to be in the right place in order for it to work. Because if you don't, then you're just nagging and nagging and nagging. The dog isn't sensitive to it at all. And so when you're moving forward, you want to make sure that you pop that collar right when they walk past your leg. And I typically do what's called a verbal correction. So I'll say ah, like that. Just because that's easy to sustain, the verbal is easy to sustain when you're moving forward, because that way you don't need the actual enforcement from the prong. You can just say ah, and it kind of catches the dog. So then what I do is I do, so that's the first thing, and then I'll do, because a lot of people, again, they put the dog in the leash, whoosh, they're off, and they don't stop, they don't do anything until the dog's back. So put the dog in the left side, we say heel, we move forward, we do a couple red light, green lights, we slow down, we stop, we slow down, we stop. And then we do some inside turns. So the inside turn is if the dog's on your left side, you're taking your left leg and you're turning into your dog and cutting them off, and then kind of just going 180 the other way. This has two benefits and utility. When you're moving forward with a dog, again, if your dog isn't used to slowing things down or changing direction, this breaks that, I don't know, breaks that build. It breaks that, hey, pay attention to me. It breaks that we're going to walk until we're back home. It's like, no, we're going to basically walk whatever way that the handler wants to go. So you're breaking.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from JELD-WEN. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all JELD-WEN windows today. View our entire selection of JELD-WEN windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In that cycle. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's
Yeah,
it. Go
I've
ahead.
done the figure eight with Ryder whenever I've tried to get him to, like, where if I notice him on the walk, like, stop paying attention to me, I'll do like a figure eight. But I haven't, I've only done to the right with Indy. Or if I like go right and 180. I haven't tried it on the inside leg.
Yeah, the inside leg's good because it's kind of a, it's like a treat, it's a cheat code too, because the dog has to hit your leg and they can't move forward. So that's the first thing I do with handlers when they come in. One of the first things I do with my handlers when they come into the facility is I make them do a square. So
Okay.
they will do a square. So they'll come out and they'll turn left and they'll turn left and they'll turn left, and basically the dog will start to kind of look up because they don't want to get stepped on and they don't want to run into your leg. And that's the first place to start. And also just make sure that you're not going fast. A lot of dog owners, what they do is they have to catch up to their dog, so they go really fast. So they're fast paced, they're moving fast, and that's not what you want to do. The dog should be with you. So the slower you go, the more you'll really be able to audit if your dog's paying attention to you or not. If you're going fast, a lot of dog owners just do that to keep up with their dog instead of slowing down. So go slow, and then you do the outside turn. So it'd be the opposite. So you essentially what I call a calibration. You go out, you do outside turn, you say heel, and then if the dog keeps going, you pop the collar. And if they come with you, you say, yes, good heel. and then you can verbally pay them. You can physically play them with food, but regardless, you want to tune them up. And what happens is if you do three or four little turns like that, you turn outside and say heel, and then the dog basically ignores you. See, this is the problem. This is the way to audit this. If the dog ignores you and keeps going, they're not engaged with you, because physically when you turn and go the other way, your dog should go, going that way. And also when you say heel, they should know that they have to heel with you. They have to stay at your heels. So that's an easy icebreaker there. If I say, okay, do an outside turn, and you say heel, and the dog just keeps going and you go the other way, that tells you really quickly your heel's not great and your dog isn't engaged with you. And that's a very simple way to... So if people come out and they say, hey, my dog's pulling me, I say, turn outside with your dog and say heel. And if the dog keeps going, boom. I'm like, yeah, your dog's not engaged and your dog doesn't know heel that well, period. So we can't complain about the pulling. And then you just do the drawback recall where you come out and then you just backpedal and say, rider, Indy, heel, or come. And then the dog comes back to you. And again, this really breaks that tunnel vision cycle. Once the dog is on a leash, they're like, okay, we're going to go. They know the walk. They know your neighborhood. They know where you're going to go, and that's it. But once you start breaking that down to say, so I always encourage people, like, let's say you go on a mile walk. Do a quarter mile in the same area. Like, you can still do the same duration. You can still go out for a 35, 40-minute walk, but you're not going the distance. You're working in a small little area to keep the dog engaged.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. The third thing I would say outside of the engagement and the dog understanding the heel would be your corrections and your timing. This is a big problem for dog owners, is that we hear this all the time, like any other industry. The consumer says, hey, I'm doing it. And then the professional goes, yeah, you are, but you're doing it wrong, which is very common, especially with a skill like this, because it is very... call it artsy. It's very hands-on. You know, it's like martial arts or dancing or music or playing an instrument. It's like, I'm playing the chord. You're like, yeah, but you're not, though. Like, it looks on paper, it looks like you are, but you're not, right? It doesn't sound the same. Doesn't look the same. So when you're doing that pop and you're doing that correction, it's imperative that you're doing this correction and this pop before the dog gets to the end of the leash. Once the, and again, this is with any collar that has action. It doesn't matter if it's a prong collar, plastic pinch collar, martingale collar, slip leash, dominant dog collar, etc. If you're popping the collar when the dog is pulling against you, you're not popping, you're pulling. So you're pulling the dog into position instead of correcting the dog for getting out of position.
Okay.
So if you look at your leash and the dog is at the end of it and you're trying to correct, it's voided out. So you have to make sure that you pop the collar before the dog puts tension on it, because that's the only mechanical way that collars with action work. And that's a skill set and that's a timing thing. So that's what happens is dogs get to the end of the leash. The owner's like, hey, the prong collar is not working. But the prong collar it's not invented or supposed to be used with that, like that. It's supposed to have action. So it's supposed to come up in unity really fast to disrupt what the dog is doing and correct them. So it's really important that you do that, because if they pull against the prong, that again, a lot of dog owners just think when the dog hits the prong, they don't like it and they come back. That is not true. I have a lot of videos on that of dogs just yanking people down with prong collars. It's not the prongs, it's the action of the prongs. So that's really important to make sure that you get that function. Those are the three reasons why the heel or the dog won't pull. I have never had anything outside of that ever, why a dog is not doing well. There's nothing outside of those three things.
So as far as the last one, I never let the leash get to the end.
Okay.
So there's always like room, even if he like starts to pull, I can release leash in order to give me room in order. So basically the way that I carry my leash for either of them, I only use, for India, I've used like a 6-foot lead, but I still hold it like just as close. For Ryder, I use a 4-foot I loop it over my thumb, and then I bring it back up. I loop it over my pointer. I bring it back up. I loop it, and then I like hold it in my hand so that way I can release part of it and then pop it. So I can always have like the correction if I need it. And they're never like that far from me.
Good.
And with what I've been doing with Indy is I've had to like kind of hold it a little bit tighter. And then when I've tried to give the correction, I'm trying to like release it and then pop it. So could it not be working because it's the tension's like already there and the collar's kind of like a little bit more cinched already?
Like I said, it's a big excuse me, it's a big timing thing. Yes, it could be that. It also, if you're putting too much pressure on your leash, so it kind of sounds like you're kind of wrapping it a little bit, or you're kind of heavy-handed with that leash. You have to make sure that you're mindful that like you're really loose on it's kind of weird. It sounds like you're doing it's contradicting. It sounds like you have a loop.
Well, it works perfect for Ryder, but Ryder also knows what like he's not supposed to pull. The second there starts to be tension on the leash, he stops and looks back at me and he's like, "Hey, what do you want me to do?"
No, I get it. Yeah, no, it makes sense. I would just make sure that, and it could be that the dog doesn't understand heel that well either. So that's the other thing, is if that's what you
I don't
think,
think he knows it at all.
well, then yeah, then you
So
have.
that's what I've been trying to teach him. So I've tried it with food Loring to try and like get him into position and like try and teach him that command. But when it's on a walk, he's like he could care less. He's just bouncing, he's zigzagging. He's just like so raring to go. Which is why I started trying to do like just we're gonna walk and then we're gonna stop and then you're gonna like kind of chill out. And then once you chill out, then we're gonna start going again. And that seemed to have like calmed him on the walk. But I so I then I started doing it in the backyard with food Loring to try and do the heel position. And he was doing it, but I don't know if it's like actually like clicking. Because like the way I taught Ryder was obviously on a leash, and
So
like,
are you trying to do this off leash with Indy instead of on leash? Is that what you're saying?
on the walk he's on leash. In the backyard he's off leash with just like food Loring,
Yeah, I would keep him on the
and
I'd keep him on the leash for sure.
keep him on leash.
Yeah, because you're yes. Off the only time that you do that off leash stuff is when your dog understands it on leash. And yeah, the off leash stuff is the advance. So once you start to understand that, once your dog conceptualizes the behavior well enough to do things in a very heavy distracted environment, that's when you can start doing the off. For me, any off leash training only comes when the dog is like really good, really good. That's the only time that leash comes off, when we're training. Yeah. So that's what you're doing, is you're saying, hey, my dog doesn't know this, and I'm jumping into the deep end and I can't swim. Of course. Yeah. So because let's say, okay, let's put your dog on the left side and you turn and you say heel and your dog goes the other way. Start over. You do it again. Boom, the other way. Start over. You have no accountability. You have no guidance there. You have to keep the dog on the leash in order to navigate that in the beginning. So food luring is great, but you also need a guiding rail, which is going to be your leash. So the lure is like, hey, come get this and fall into place. But if the dog doesn't fall into place and immediately starts to go away from you, then you have to start over. Every single time you have to start over. So let's say you put your food lure out and he's like, ooh, piece of candy. Because right now, if you have your food lure, you're saying, here's $10. Follow the $10. Okay, I want money. I'm following the $10. The moment that that rabbit poop or squirrel or bird chirps and there's a $50 bill that just goes right around, you're gone. You have to start over. So, yeah. Yeah, you definitely want to keep them, definitely keep them on the leash until you're at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll try that with him.
Yeah. You shouldn't let the dog off leash until you have the ability to do all the things on leash.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you think that's the way to go, though, if for at least teaching him heel in regards to doing it, like, in the yard on leash?
You could. You could.
Since he doesn't seem to kind of respond to anything outside on the walk.
Exactly. I would be hesitant to, like, if the dog isn't doing well on, like, outside, I would go inside and I would just work in a hallway. I would work in a kitchen. That's what I did with my Borble young dog, is I just did all my obedience inside. I did the place, I did the down, I did the stays, I did all that inside. Once you transfer outside and once you transfer off leash, your dog should be 100% trained off leash. And your dog's 10% trained on leash. So that's why you're failing, is you're saying, hey, yeah, I have no idea how to swim. And you're jumping into the deep end and you're going, I don't understand why I'm sinking. It's like, well, it's really easy. You don't know what you're doing yet. So you definitely want to start inside to develop. If the dog doesn't know the fun, it's like taking a first grader and throwing them into high school algebra. And they're like, what? You're like, well, you're failing. It's like, I don't know what these things are, right? So if your dog doesn't, you know what I mean? If your dog doesn't know heel and you're going, let's go outside with tons of distractions and work on something you don't know, then yeah, of course you're going to, you know, you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then how can I correct fence jumping?
Fence jumping, give me context.
So our backyard has an outside 7-foot fence and an inside, like, 3-foot fence.
Mm-hmm.
Andy likes to jump the inside fence and go jump in the pond. So typically we leave them in the internal fence. So he likes to jump out there and then go poop out there when, like, the inside part is, like, the dog yard. So he kind of got his chutzpah, and now he jumps it all the time and goes straight for the pond and jumps in the pond and comes back all saturated. And he won't do it when I'm there. Yep. But the second I, like, so if I have him on the outside fence and or like in the outside yard and I close it, and then the second I put my hand on like the door to go inside and I open the door, he's jumping it to like come after me.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's not as big of a deal because it's like he kind of can't get out of our yard on that side, but my neighbor, the fence between us and our neighbor is only a 5-foot fence, and she has another 5-foot fence outside.
So it's we talked about this.
So I'm worried that the second like he learns that he can go that way, that we're going to run into some trouble.
Yeah, it's what we talked about earlier with the the dog leaving the yard when you're not home it's training. I don't want to say it's not training because it is training, but there's more to it than that. So if I get this right, when you're not home, your dog essentially, I know there's context.
Oh no, I don't leave him outside when I'm not home.
Okay. So,
but like if I will put him outside and I will be inside.
Okay, never mind. Forget I said that. That's not what I meant. I meant, well, okay, when you're not around,
uh-huh,
right? When you're not around, when you're inside and he's outside alone, he will jump the fence and go do stuff that you don't want him to do.
Basically, yes.
Okay. So it's a lot like what we talked about earlier where your dog wants to do something and this isn't an obedience thing, so it's not a traditional obedience where when you're outside and you say come and he comes or whatever, it's opportunistic getting out of the yard, which we discussed earlier, but I'm going to reiterate it again and put it into context of your situation. So the best type of training for this is, well, here's what I would do is, personally, what I would do is if a dog is consistently doing and or consistent, if a dog is consistently breaking the rules off leash, you have to find a way to start having off leash communication right now. And that's, you don't have that right now. So off leash communication would be the ability to hold the dog accountable off leash, which is remote collar work typically.
Yeah.
And so that's the context is, you're outside with him. He's like, I know better. I can't jump the fence because mom's going to get upset. Whatever. He knows that. He's like, I can't do this. Or he doesn't want to. Or maybe because he's with you, he's not bored. And then when you go inside, he's either like, oh, here's my shot. I'm not going to get in trouble because you're not home. And it's kind of like having your cake and eat it too, where literally, right? He eats the cake. And then afterwards you're like, don't do that again. He's like swallowing it. He's like, oh, it's okay. Sorry. He's already gotten it. Right. So he's already jumping the fence and swimming and wreaking havoc and doing whatever he wants to do. And then when he comes back, you're probably like, what did you do? And he's like, well, too late. So that's difficult to work with only because the deed is already done, if you will.
Yeah.
So you just have to focus on, okay, what's the reality here? We can, So what I do with, like, if it was my dog and my dog was like my younger dog Burley does things like this, for an example, if I'm outside, like I have a sauna and I have like my towels and things hanging on the rack. And if I'm outside, he's like, oh, cool. Dad's here. We're playing. We're running around. But then when he gets bored and he gets frustrated and he's like, I got nothing else to do. And it's kind of it's a very short fuse for him too. He's 1 minute, I'm sure it's like your dog, oh, running around, having fun off leash out in the yard. And then all of a sudden when you're flipping an egg or sending an email, he's like, whoop, I'm gone. And you're like, okay. Like, so you can't really tell when the dog's going to do it because it's kind of like this cheeky, mischievous thing. It's not like you let him outside and then he just, you know, it'd be a lot easier if you just let him outside. And every time you let him outside, he just runs and jumps over the fence. It's kind of like he sees his shot. He's bored for 30 seconds. You're not paying attention and he's gone. Likely.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but likely. That's just typical what dogs do.
Basically like what it seems like.
Yeah. And that's what, and again, that's what my dog does is I'm kind of, so anyway, so I have my remote collar on him. I've already introduced it. I have a pager, which is a vibration, which he doesn't like. It's a correction, but it's a very, for him, it's a very minimal correction. It's kind of like me saying, hey, knock it off right in front of him, but in the house when he's outside, which is great. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say he jumped up and grabbed the towel and tried to rip it off the rack. And I was standing right there and I said, leave it. And he's like, oop, and he drops it. And he's like, sorry. I can do that wirelessly inside my house while I'm talking to you right now if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So that's been really helpful because he knows that, well, in some instances, he doesn't really know. Like, it's inconsistent, unfortunately, because there's some times where I'm not paying attention and then he gets something without the correction. But most times when he gets it and he gets corrected, it really decreases his likelihood of doing it again, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So again, zooming out and saying, okay, we have a dog that is off leash doing something. And it doesn't matter if it's barking or not coming back or jumping the fence or chasing chickens or whatever. The reality is you really need to catch it when it happens in order to stop it. Because if we look at the facts here, is he's doing something that causes great joy to him, right? So he's doing something that he really likes. Jumping this fence and going to roll around in mud and get into the pond, really, the dopamine for him is high. He's like, this is great, unless he wouldn't be doing it, right? So what I would, realistically, I mean, I can give you all these like unrealistic things and you're going to come back to it and you're going to say, okay, that didn't work. But realistically, I would be working on remote collar training with him outside of outside of this issue. Because if you look at it on paper, this dog is having off-leash problems, right? So whenever whenever you have a dog that's not listening or doing things that you don't want off-leash, you have to have off-leash training. And to me, the definition is unless you can reach out and touch your dog or hold your dog accountable off-leash, and again, you can counter it and you can say whatever, like, oh, we're just going to put treats all over the yard. No. The reality is your dog is doing something off-leash, and unless you catch it the moment he's doing it and make it uncomfortable from him doing it, right? So right now the pleasure is way more than the pain, or it's like 100 to 0. 100 to 0. So he's like, well, hell, this is great. This is no problem for me. I'm a deer. I'm just going to jump over this, and I'm going to go over here, and then I'm going to come back, you know, covered in mud and water and whatever. And you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Not good. So that's what I would realistically be working on, is I would be doing remote collar training, and then I would be using the remote collar after the dog is trained to stop this from happening.
Okay. I did want to do the e-collar with him as well too. I just haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah. So that's the reality of it, is your dog is doing off-leash stuff because he really loves it. And the only
quick question in that regard, that he loves it, do you think if I did an actual dog jump or something like that I can build for him in the dog yard and train him to jump on command, do you think giving him that outlet would help in deterring that? Because we also have because Ryder loves the pond too, but we trained Ryder that instead of going in the pond, he has his own little tub, and he taught Indy to go in the tub. Indy ignores the tub and goes he chooses what he wants to choose. But in regards to the jumping, if I did something similar to that, with maybe I give him a healthier outlet that I can do with him and teach him to jump, would that be a way to kind of deter it?
No. It realistically, no. Because is it a way to outlet it? Sure. But it's not the jumping that if it was the jumping, he'd be jumping over the fence and jumping back and jumping over and jumping back. It's not the jumping he likes. It's the fact
reward.
Yeah, it's everything on the
that makes sense.
The grass is greener on the other side. And even if it was, and even if it was, it still wouldn't work because he's going to, so if you say, hey, jump over this instead of the fence, the moment you walk away, he's like, well, there's the fence. Boom, I'm going to jump over it. That wouldn't work. That's what I'm saying is, we can go through all these avoidable, well, let's do this instead. It's just not, and I know you trust me, and I know you're,
it's just better to
it's much better to not go against primal behavior. And I shouldn't say that. It's much better not to try to compete with primal behavior. It's easier to just let the dog know that what they're doing is inappropriate and dangerous and you don't want them to do it. So goal isn't to say, I don't want you to jump over the fence, or I want you to try to jump over something else instead of this fence because it puts you into somebody else's property or puts you into the pond. It's more about, if you jump over this fence, you're going to get in trouble. Because
The correction of it.
Okay. That's it. I mean, look at our world that we live in. Every single day, that's how we think. Every day, probably every 5 minutes, we think about risk over reward. Every day.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, I can give you a million different contexts in the last hour on the phone with you that I could say it's been risk over reward this whole conversation. And just like when we hang up with the next conversation, it's always this kind of balance of life, right? So realistically, and that's how I train. I mean, I was the same way with my dog before I was a trainer. I was like, and then my dog played chicken with a train and didn't come back off leash because I have food and he wanted to run after the train instead. And I was like, okay, he doesn't give a shit about the food when something else is more valuable. And then I switched to e-collars and it changed my life. So I would just say, if you can stand inside and the moment he goes, I'm going to jump over the fence, and you correct him, he's like, holy crap. And then he does it again and you correct him and he realizes that every time he almost springs over that fence, he gets punished. You're going to have 100% more likelihood of stopping him jumping that fence than if you just gave him an outlet when you were around, because you'd have to be there in order for that to work. But if you made it uncomfortable for him to jump that fence and you disrupted it the moment that he tried to do it, that's going to be a more sustainable, realistic, and safer option, because you can't, shouldn't say that. I have seen people predicate their training off of avoidance or rewards, and in the moment that the dog finds something more motivating, you lose your training. It literally unravels before your eyes in seconds.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. And I just want to steer you down the right road, you know? So.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. I only knew very absolute minimal, like, stuff before I got Ryder, and like I've had to learn it like throughout my time with owning him, and it's I'm learning more and more every day, so I appreciate it, and I appreciate you being like, no, you're being stupid, don't do that. I appreciate it more than you know. Sure. As far as like an e-collar for Indy, I have the 280C for Ryder. I was considering getting the Q, the dog trick Q, for him. Would it be better to start it with the 280C? Because I don't know if the Q has the vibration.
I don't know. I haven't worked with the Q too much. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, all I know is the collar that I created with Dogtra, the Tom Davis Dogtra 280C is you know, I kind of like put it together with
conversations. Yeah, that's the one I have.
Yeah, I put it together with conversations like this in mind, where I know what it has, you know, with the corrections, with the e-collar stimulation and the pager, and I know that that's a. Yeah.
Okay, I'll just start with that one then.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's good. It's good talking to you. I wish you the best of luck.
You as well.
Wish you the best of luck moving forward. And yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Hope I don't have to talk to you again soon.
All right. Yeah. Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye.